Okay. All right. So we started last week. We started the section about fact. It starts with the idea of Hashem created different components in the creation, and that some of them are inanimate. They don't have any free choice. Even the growing things, but He gave within man the great soul, and He put us in charge of He enabled us to, you know, pursue great things, and that person, given the free choice and the ability, the license to pursue nobility, is called upon to ride herd over his Nefesh HaBahamas, and becoming a great person. So he's now going to do, in paragraph Ches, is he's going to go back to his discussion of the Nefesh HaBahamas, because really, like much of the book, is just how to curb the Nefesh HaBahamas. So he's going to talk, you know, he's going to explain it, understand it, and then try to explain what it is and how to deal with it at all. And he starts with a paragraph by saying, "V'nachzor l'inyan," let's get back to the matter here. You know, let's get back to our discussion of the Nefesh HaBahamas. Just a second.
Amen.
Okay. So he says, "V'nachzor l'inyan," let's get back to the inyan. Nefesh HaBahamas, the animalistic spirit. Now, the animalistic spirit, again, is the part of us that is really quite literally like that of, like an animal, meaning that an animal wants to eat, wants to pleasure itself, wants to not work. So these are bodily lusts. People have a part of them that pursues bodily lusts. That's the Nefesh HaBahamas. So what happens in everyday life, in the everyday function of the Nefesh HaBahamas, is that when you want to fulfill the Nefesh HaBahamas, it appears like you're thinking. So let's say if a person has a rationale for doing something that he shouldn't do, you know, pursuing an illicit relationship, not doing a mitzvah because of laziness or whatever, doing Nefesh HaBahamas type activities, it's generally attended by some kind of rationale. It looks almost like there's going to be a rationale, or that it's thinking that prompts a person to fulfill, to follow his Nefesh HaBahamas. And Musser, we say that, and this is not directly what he's saying, but the Musser Svarim are full of the idea that when a person wants to do something, so the Yetzer Hara formulates thoughts within his mind to rationalize it. But it's not driven by pure thought, it's driven by lust. So sometimes a thought in its pure, you know, unadulterated, what's the word? In its pure unadulterated version, that's not what I'm thinking of, incarnation, right? And it's pure in unadulterated incarnation, comes to us and tells us that we should do something or that we shouldn't do something. Sometimes the Nefesh HaBahamas comes to us and tells us we should do something, but why do it? It's not right. So then there's an attending thought process, which isn't really a thought process, it's a rationale. Like the classical story about this or that depicts this is told of Reb Chaim Volozhin, who had a student who apparently became non-observant. He went someplace that he shouldn't have gone. I don't know exactly what it was. So, in the later years, he met the Rebbe, and the Rebbe said, you know, what happened to you? So he said, well, I had this, you know, article of faith, and this question of faith, and that question of faith, and that's why I decided to do what I, you know, decided to do what I decided to do. So Reb Chaim said to him, did these questions bother you before you did what you do? He did. I mean, did they bother you, these questions against faith that you now have? Did they occur before you began going off the path? Or did they occur to you afterwards? So he said, they occur to me afterwards. So he said, if they occur to you afterwards, they're not questions, but they're answers. Meaning, they're not questions against the faith, but they're answers. They're trying to answer up in your mind why you did what you did. Meaning that, in fact, the origin of the behavior is your lust, your desire not to be bound by Torah, not to be bound by this, not to do what you want. But that is a difficult thing to live with. So the mind, prevaricates different kinds of thoughts that rationalize and explain to you why you should do what you're doing. So he doesn't talk about that. He's just saying that the Nefesh of Bahamas is this like dumb, unthinking thing within us, and it tells us to do things. I'm adding to that that that's true, but it doesn't look like that. He's telling you the way it is, and that is the way it is. Because if it weren't for the Nefesh Bahamas, these thoughts wouldn't be there. That's what Reb Chaim told the student. That because of the Nefesh Bahamas, that's why these thoughts are there. But that means that they're not thoughts. They're just ways of making the, you know, the exercise of the Nefesh Bahamas tolerable. And acceptable to you after you're already doing it anyway.
Rabbi, does the Nefesh HaBahamas try to disguise its thoughts to make it seem like they're legitimate?
Well, the way he puts it, he describes the Nefesh HaBahamas as a non-thinking being. It seems that the way it works, and he alludes to it a little differently than, you know, he does alludes to it almost backhandedly. That's why I gave this little drop of introduction about about the thoughts that come with it. But it seems there's a combination of the Nefesh HaBahamas and the Yetzer Hara. These are two separate things that are percolating within us. So the Nefesh HaBahamas, lusts for something. The Yetzer Hara provides the rationale, and then the Yetzer Hara, it seems, is an independent being that tweaks the Nefesh HaBahamas, and entices it, activates it, he gives it a kick, tells it to start lusting for things. So that tandem of the Yetzer Hara and the Nefesh HaBahamas, that's what we're...
Do they sort of feed off each other a little bit? Like, do they kind of, like, keep on spinning around and growing, or...?
I don't know about that. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
the more the Nefesh HaBahamas... So you were talking about habits before. The more the Nefesh HaBahamas, like, accustoms... The more Nefesh HaBahamas satisfies itself...
Yeah.
Right, and the stronger the rationales of the Yetzer Hara are, then the more justification the Nefesh HaBahamas has to satisfy itself, and then it just keeps on going.
All right, we'll let's read this now. Well, we'll see his treatment of it.
Is it generally accepted that by everybody that these are two separate entities, or is it just special and nefesh?
I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty. I don't think anybody argues with this. I don't think anyone argues with it. I don't know if everybody deals with it so in such a clinical way. Like the normal, you know, run of the mill Musar Shmuz or rabbi speech, you know, or various forms of exhortations to behave well are usually kind of generalized, you know, just say no. That's one of my favorites, you know, just say no. Like, just don't do it. You know, do good or don't do bad things. You know, make up from now on. You're gonna... His whole book is sort of predicated on the idea that that doesn't work so easily. You can't just say no. Because these things, forces that cause us to act improperly are very profoundly embedded within us, and it's a whole big science to conquer it. So I don't know that anyone says it isn't so. Maybe there are other people that believe in a different system. You know, maybe some people feel if you have a whole big major emotional experience that it obviates the needs for some of this stuff. I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know what to say. But he, his approach is to deal with the stuff directly, and that's how you do keep an amidos. You know, you change yourself. Okay. All right. So v'nachzur l'inyan. Let's go back to our basic subject, meaning about the nefesh of Hamas. So paragraph ches, page 36. Nefesh of Bahamas, the Nefesh of Bahamas, Daito Ketzara Ma'od. It's got, he says it means like a short attention span. I just thought that he's not smart, but he says it's a short attention span. A short attention span, I think, is a little bit misleading because someone that's very intelligent could also have a short attention span. You know, it's not quite a short attention span. It's more than that. It's like it doesn't have too much, you know, too much intelligence. Kitzofa ve'enei basar. It observes the world with eyes of flesh. The translator means material eyes. She'ena, I think it means, ve'enei basar means it only sees like immediate gratification. It doesn't gaze far away and think of far, you know, reaching consequences and so on. It just sees it sees as far as the next plate of food or something like that. She'ena roa sela b'samuch, it only sees close by, bagoloi, that which is revealed, uvishalachshav, and that which is present. At present, now. Bovedes etza, and it's bereft of counsel, of wisdom. Litchos tofel mitneiker, to displace that which is less important in face of that which is important. Meaning, it doesn't, important or not important, takes planning, and it doesn't have any planning. You can't do that. Varai mipnei kavua, and it can't displace that which is temporary in favor of that which is set and permanent. V'igam kein mechuseres gvura. It also lacks strength. Gvura means like gibor. It lacks strength. The hainu, that is, shein bo gvura v'hisorer. It doesn't have strength to be aroused. Mishnas atzlusa, from the sleep of its laziness. Vasok b'eza mitzvah saseh. It doesn't have the ability to rouse itself, to do what's right. meaning it, let's say we rouse ourselves every morning, really, you know, you get out of bed, it's this type of activity that happens. So the part of you wants, part of us, part of a person wants to stay in bed, and then there's another part of him that rouses, you know, rouses me out of bed. But that comes from a different place. The Nefesh Bahamas wants to stay in bed. The Seichel, the Yetzer Tov, whatever it is, comes and brings force to bear against the Nefesh Bahamas and says, hey, get out of bed. And he says the Nefesh Bahamas itself can't do that to itself. It doesn't have the ability to alter its course.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Are all of the body, the, when you talk about the Nefesh Bahama,
Bahamas.
Are all the body's needs directly related to it, to that? Does the body have some part of it that's beyond the Nefesh Bahama? Like we say, you know, who created man with wisdom, you know, when we're referring to the body, you know? And it seems to me, you know, in my life that the body is not inherently a negative thing, you know? It's like something that I think that when kept in balance, you know, is a vehicle for spirituality, that its needs are not necessarily evil, you know, or anything, you know?
Its needs shouldn't be condemned.
Right.
Or spoken of negatively. Right. Well, you see, he's going to say, what he's going to end up, as the book goes on, the direction he will take is that the Nefesh Bahamas of our bodies is the equivalent or something of the equivalent of that elephant, an example that he gave when he started, where he said that an elephant is very hard to train, requires training, but once it's properly trained, then becomes an enormous resource on behalf of the owner.
Right.
But if you don't train the elephant properly, it destroys you. If you train it too harshly, it may come destroy the trainer. If it's trained too leniently, it also isn't good for the owner.
Right.
It requires a great deal of wisdom and attention. And once that's directed in its training properly, then the thing becomes harnessed to do very great things on behalf of its owner. And that's very much the way he's looking at the Nefesh Bahamas.
And you have to know the nature of the beast, you know.
Well, this is what he's saying, that you know that you have to know. That's what the book is all about. He said, just like when you train the this is not a book about training elephants. it's about exactly what you're saying about the person
This paragraph reminds me of a scene of, you know, watching somebody at an all-you-can-eat food bar where they paid their money, and they're just...
They have no self-control.
Eating away and, you know, going up, eating, coming back, eating.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, the short attention span, just no... Unless they get filled up, that's it. They'll keep going.
Yeah, I mean it's about eating. It's about other lusts, that people that you know do other types of physical things that are not good for them. Mm-hmm. So, in a perfect situation, those physical needs are in perfect balance. They're given exactly what they need, and then they can function to serve the master.
Look at how you can deal with your yes or heart to control these lusts.
Right. It's like if a person does what he can, is trying to control his bodily, like his bodily, his bodily nefesh of Bahamas. Take sex, for example. That's always, fucks people up. We talk about that, but people understand that there's a problem. That if you let it go, unrestricted, so you get into all kinds of very unsavory lifestyles, and there's no families, and there's no, people are obsessed with it, it overtakes their lives. So it's like letting the elephant just run amok, and it can destroy a person. People, how many times you hear the sexual scandal, and that sexual scandal. This guy ruins his life, and that guy ruins his life, and then he ruins his marriage, and it's terrible. Then the reaction to that is often to restrict it overly harshly. So you have celibates, but then when you have celibates, so it's also going against the proper, the proper expression of that drive, because it's too overly restrictive. Once it's too overly restrictive, then you have repression. Once you have repression, then it comes out in funny ways. So you have lawsuits against people that practice celibacy for homosexuality, because they've been told that sex with women is sinful, and it's an unhealthy restriction that begets all kinds of funny stuff. So the Torah's basic recipe of marriage and controlling the personal life, not neither stuffing it out nor living it without, with abandon, without controls, all of that, is a guide to doing it right. That's good for a talk about Taras HaMishpacha, like living the proper, having a proper marriage life and all that. In the context of this book, it's an example of how the Nefesh of Bahamas, when properly put in its place and given the precise or a more precise role that's both beneficial to the person, not overly restrictive, not overly licentious, and yet at the same time always being controlled, then that helps a person, it makes them happier, it makes them more fulfilled, it makes them more normal. That's a good thing. Problem is, that a lot of different things in our world face this same, dilemma of how to get it right. And the book is about mastering them. That's what it's about.
Sure, Rabbi, in the analogy with the elephant, the elephant represents the Nefesh of Bahamas, and the trainer of the elephant represents our seichel or something.
Yeah, our free will, our seichel, our neshama. Right, and the thing about it is that the elephant is within us. It's part of
right. That's the qualitative difference between the analogies, is that you can't shut the cage and walk out on the elephant,
Right, the elephant walks out with you. It does. Darn elephant is always around.
Right.
You can't lock it up. I mean, you can try, but then, it starts with repression and so on and so forth. But people lock them up. They become ascetics. It's probably an attempt to distance themselves from these lusts that bedevil us.
Is that what being a Nazir was about?
But possibly, yeah. But, you have to be on the Madrega, though. That's the thing. See, at a certain level, it's kind of also going back to the elephant. Like, if you get an elephant so highly trained, you can get him to the point that he's you know, that he's doing a foxtrot. You know, he's doing all kinds of fancy dances. But that's very, very advanced training. So this is a little bit like that with being an ascetic. If you you have to be at a very, very specific level to constrict your Nefesh HaBehamis beyond a certain point, in a way that it's positive and constructive. You could do it in a way that would be harmful and counterproductive. But the trick is to do it in a way that it's uplifting and keeps us happy. So that's, again, that's what the book is about.
And entertained, right?
entertained. All right. Okay, so let's again try to read the stuff here. Let's go back to this inyan. Nefesh HaBehamis, the Nefesh HaBehamis, Daitok Tzormaot. It's oh yeah, we did this. I'm sorry. So he said, right. It says Shane. Right. It says has no strength. Was over Mishnas Atzluso Lasok Beizel Mitzvah Saseh. It doesn't have the power to do a mitzvah saseh, a positive mitzvah. Lo, not only that. Elif Shem Kishem Akitzin Oso. When they wake it up. Pam or Pamarim once or twice, also mitzvah atzmo to do a mitzvah. Azai nasal or moras ruach becomes depressed. So this was the example that I was giving before. Like the Nefesh HaBehamis can't get itself out of bed to go to, you know, go to do a mitzvah or go to minyan or to go for anything. When we wake it, meaning when the seichel attacks. Or, you know, confronts the Nefesh HaBehamis and says, okay, son, let's get out of bed. So the Nefesh HaBehamis is resentful. That's why that's a more, how should you say?
Right after the salad bar, you're on a diet now. It's not going to like that.
Right. Well, what he's saying is, I mean, he's just talking about getting out of bed in the morning. He said, look, it happens.
Like it's so cold outside, and why did I have to walk in the snow and stuff like that?
Yeah, it's cold outside, and I'm
hungry. And I want to eat breakfast.
I resent getting up in the morning, and like we know, we get up in the morning. I don't want to get out of bed. So, without the Cheshbon HaNefesh, you say. You don't want to get out of bed. But that's true, you don't want to get out of bed. I'm not you, but that person doesn't want to get out of bed. With the Cheshbon HaNefesh, we're saying a part of him does want to get out of bed. And that's the part that rouses the Nefesh HaBehamis, because the Nefesh HaBehamis cannot rouse itself. But when that part of us wants to get out of bed, then the Nefesh HaBehamis resists being told that it has to rouse itself, and it becomes unhappy, and that's the discomfort and the malaise that we feel when we try to get ourselves out of bed and we don't feel like it. It's the Nefesh HaBehamis not being trained to its full potential to jump when you say jump, as the elephant could be trained to do a dance when I tell it to do a dance. Okay. So
it's interesting because usually you don't want to get out of bed, but if you're sick physically,
yeah,
you kind of rationalize not getting out of bed in the morning if you're not well. So, and that's really, I guess. Not really a spiritual thing, it's more of a cognitive, physical thing that you're acknowledging.
Well, that may be the right thing to do. Not all staying in bed, which happens to make the Nefesh HaBehamis happy, is bad. I mean, the whole, again, to go back to the example of the elephant, that not everything you do for the elephant is bad, just because it makes the elephant happy. It just has to be done in the right amount. It has to be fed in the right amount, it has to rest the right amount, it has to work the right amount. So, again, if you were to try to avoid getting into bed in an effort to...
have to get out of it.
in an effort to please the Nefesh HaBahamas. So at one point, or up to some level, it's a good thing. And beyond a certain point, it's just not. So if you're sick, that might be the time that it's a good time to do it. You know, that may be when you should be doing it.
Rabbi, how important is discipline in all of this? I mean, the ability to do things regularly without fail, you know? I mean, how much of the training is imposing a discipline on the Nefesh HaBahamas, and how much of it is an understanding?
Well, he's gonna say later. We'll come to this today. Although I don't know if we will at the rate that we're going, but he's going to say that when people are greater and they have greater capacity, you can just will a change on something. Say he discusses, say, two people that try to quit smoking or quit drinking booze. So a person who's very robust in his will and his ability to do things, just get up one day and say, I'm not doing it, go cold turkey. Someone else who has lesser capacity has to go piece by piece, and he's got to make tricks. His general premise is that when people were closer to Sinai, they were greater and they required fewer tricks. They could just decide this is what has to be done, and you do it. As a person gets weaker, there's a greater need for constant discipline and constant training and constant attention, because our ability to just get out of bed one day and say, I will do X, Y, Z, I will not do X, Y, Z, that strength is weakened, you know, becomes weakened.
I read that passage, and he compares the two, the person who wants to quit smoking and drinking, the person who wants to give something. He compares them with the amount of mental energy they want to expend.
Well, let's go, we'll come to it, right. We'll come to it, okay? All right. So he said. So when they wake it up, when they wake him up, it's resentful. V'lo l'kayim mitzvos lo saseh, or the same thing. If you tell it not to fulfill, it doesn't have the strength to observe a lo saseh. And to stand put against the buffeting of a ruach metzuya, meaning a regular wind, meaning shol taivos habahamios hanikri yetzuhara.
See, they're equating.
Right. Here's where I said he talks about it in a back-ended way. He said that the Nefesh HaBahamas doesn't have the ability to withstand this Taiva HaBahamas that's called the Yetzirah. What does that mean? It means that the Nefesh HaBahamas itself is one thing, the Taiva HaBahamas is something else, which is the Yetzirah. And he's saying the Nefesh HaBahamas doesn't have the ability to withstand it. So it seems that there's some other force that's out there that's sort of tweaking the nose of the Nefesh HaBahamas and telling it to do its thing, and that the Nefesh HaBahamas doesn't have the ability to resist it. And that's called, Ruach Metzuya means a normal one, meaning a more typical temptation. Or, of a kol shekain, and certainly Baruch She'enu Metzuya means an abnormal wind, meaning a very powerful thing that comes very infrequently. Hanikra Nisoyon, that's called a test. That meaning that the nefesh bahamas, it can't do anything by itself, and it certainly can't resist the inducement of this yetzer hara to go and do the wrong thing. Okay? All right, v'lo od, and not only that, elosh nichnas, nichnas, it is humbled, v'nitches, and is pushed aside, v'pnei yetzer hara, because of the yetzer hara, tekef umiyad, immediately the yetzer hara can get after him. She'im lo came, for if not so, if it didn't have to react suddenly, or if it wasn't pushed aside suddenly, ha'yichola la'haisa yichola la'hashlim kotzer ha'masik shelo, it could have compensated for its lack of perception, al yidei ha'mlocha m'suna, through careful, deliberate work, meaning he could have thought it over, give me time, I'll think it over, I'll decide if I want to do it. Omnam, but Misha Einbo Ruch Gvura Lamod Ol Nafsho, doesn't have the strength to like gird himself, Likach Lo Pnai Lo Hamlocha, and take the time for contemplation, Ein Lo Takana, he has no hope, doesn't can't be helped. So I think he's saying that the nefesh of Bahamas itself can't help itself, and it can't take time off to contemplate what needs to be done. But a person could. If a person doesn't want to do that, he has no help. So this is a little bit. See, he in a sense is saying that if you ain't doing it the way he says you should do it, and you're not really sitting down and really you're not sitting down and you're not sitting down and making a plan to work on the nefesh of Bahamas, nothing's going to help.
What about, like, it talks about surrendering to the Yetzer Hara, but what about also becoming the tool of the Yetzer Tov? I mean, can't the Yetzer Tov also use the animal instinct to also do things for the good?
It's a very interesting question.
I mean, when you think of the mitzvah of Pru or Vu, for example,
yeah.
I mean, there you are.
Yeah.
And when you think of other things involving food, I don't know, there must be just as many ways at which the Yetzer HaTov can take one's animal instincts and use them for the good just as easily as the Yetzer Hara can use it for not good.
Right. It seems it's a very interesting thing, and it's really like touches at the heart of the whole business. But it seems to me, I mean, it seems that what he's saying is that there's a that there's an instinctive automatic linkage between the desires of the Yetzer Hara and the Nefesh of Bahamas. Because he says it's nitchas tekef, it's nichnas tekef, it immediately humbles itself to what the Yetzer Hara wants. So if the Yetzer Hara would come to the Nefesh of Bahamas and say, you know, go to sleep. Sleep, don't get up for minyan. No. So that, you got a willing participant, and the Nefesh of Bahamas responds automatically. If you come to the Nefesh of Bahamas and say, charge out of bed, if you hear that it's time for shul, you can get it to do it, but that already sounds like that's the example of training the elephant, that that's the thing that requires all this training if you want it to respond that way. So it seems that it seems fairly clear that for some reason, when it comes to the bad, there's an immediate interface between the Yetzer Hara and the Nefesh HaBehamas. It doesn't require any training, like with the elephant. It just quickly gravitates towards that type of thing. It also gravitates to good, but it's not interfacing with the Yetzer Hara, with the Yetzer Tov. Yetzer Tov has to sit and train it 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 and train it, and then once it's in a certain place, then it does what the Yetzer Hara wants it to do.
Well, that goes back to the short attention span, I guess. I mean, with the Yetzer Tov, it needs a longer attention span to figure out, you know, what it's going to get that it likes.
Well, but the thing is that if the Yetzer Tov tells it right now, go to Minyan, and the Yetzer Hara comes to it and says, you know, you stay at the party and have a few more shots, have a few more little more booze and more food and more whatever what you're doing there. So the voice that says rouse yourself and go to Minyan won't talk to it automatically unless it's been trained directly.
Do we believe
the other one will?
Do we believe the Chazal had to do this training, or did they naturally?
Well, he's going to say this later. That's one of the things that he's going to say about when you're greater, you can just will your change without all the interim steps and all the chachmas and all the subterfuges to get things to happen. But that's.
Rabbi, I have a question that's a little unusual. Where, what does the Nefesh HaHama look like, and where is it located?
I don't know.
I mean, is it like they said that the Yetzer Hara, like in the Tanya, it says, is in the left ventricle of the heart?
I have no idea.
Is it something that you can put your finger on in your own self? I mean, is it located in a specific place? Is it an abstract concept like the Yetzer Hara is, or? Is it part of your body, or is it part of your nature or your character? Does it?
I mean, it's a physical. It's a physical part of your body.
Is it in your blood?
I don't know. I don't know if it matters all that much.
Well, it to put a sometimes like when you're trying
for philosophy
or something, you know,
maybe philosophy it matters or science it matters, but in terms of behavior, you only have to know that there's a part of you that lusts for these physical things. If the lust emanates, and if it's in your heart or in your blood or in your finger or in your ear, what difference does it make?
Well, because you like for an act, like go back to the elephant example, right?
Yeah.
You have to know how to appeal to the elephant.
Yeah,
you know?
But I don't think that matters. When you have to train your, so let's say if you train yourself to get out of bed earlier in the morning,
right,
to be more energetic. So you know you do it in stages, or you do it suddenly, you do it this, but it doesn't matter if it's located, for argument's sake, in your earlobe or in your nose or
right.
in your toe. The training is the same thing.
It's equivalent.
Yeah.
All right, let's try to get through chat.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Lufisha Adam Mitchilas Briyaso Nolad Behemo Mamish. Because a person from at the beginning of his creation is born exactly like a behemo, like an animal. All of his deeds are done automatically. His Yetzer Hara gets bigger, stronger, and greater every day. Meshi Voldo, from the time of his birth, Atom Kol Shnei Katnuso, until the days of his being a child end. He's constantly getting more Yetzer Hara. Valkei Nikra Shmo, Zokei Nifsil. That's why the Yetzer Hara is called old and foolish, meaning it's old because it preceded the desire to be good. The desire, to fulfill a nefesh bahama starts at birth. What does a baby want? It wants its food. It wants warmth. It wants, you know, to be held. It wants this. A child wants their toys. They want their this. They want their pleasures. They don't begin thinking in high-minded terms until they're a little older. So the part of them that just wants their needs to be satisfied precedes the part of them that really desires, thinks in more high-minded terms. That basic idea, I think, of a bar mitzvah is that the Yetzer Tov is really born within a person at the time of bar bat mitzvah. That lofty component within us that strives for goodness and spirituality, that comes at a bar mitzvah.
Even like the younger kids you saw in school, you didn't notice it? And the stuff they did?
I guess that the traits, the character traits are there and they're automatic. So the people are born nice people, but the idea that I'm going to sit back and think, you go, you study something like this Cheshbon HaNefesh, and say, well, I'm nice to a certain point, bad to a certain point, I have to sit back and think about how I'm going to change myself. But that's not... You know, a child will do Chesed automatically.
Right.
But they're not really part of the whole belief system and stuff until later. Okay? Achen, this is the fourth Hebrew word line down the middle line. Achen, achar kach, afterwards. Betchilo maschelos l'skalos po ruach etza chachmul gvura. You begin to see in it a spirit of counsel, wisdom, strength. The Hayu Shanasa Balbachirah becomes a person of choice. The Skavin Bupulosov Lasoka says a tachlas yadua tomid, to obtain with its deeds certain objectives. Meaning that it's not just out to satisfy itself, it's out to obtain objectives. Umagamu is komen pitsas Negid ruach taiva habahame, and also to begin to stand up against the lust within us. Part of the maturation of having the Yetzer Tov is to resist the call of the Yetzer of the Nefesh HaBahamas. V'lishos achi yomolech al kolpanim barach binasu tchilo, at least to wait till we think it over. You don't just do whatever you feel like doing. You think it over. Maybe you should. Maybe you shouldn't. You think it over with your ruach binaso. Hamaschelas lios roes and all that begins to see the outcomes of things. Vosu perik mamash, and at that time exactly, maschila nimei hanairos, that youth begins. Shu es chuletes oso hano. Hanaimo, that is when this pleasant lust, pleasure is born, masos tzedakah v'chesed, to do charity and kindness, rios with other people, lumsha koach ruach, and to attain pleasure, lakir chidushim nifloim b'bchinos ha'yitzurim, to see tremendous and wondrous insights into the creations. And all this starts once the Yetzer Hara, once the Yetzer Tov begins to begins to percolate.
Is that really like an Adam and Chava kind of experience where suddenly they go from like being in automatic mode to really understanding the moral significance of things, good and bad? Is that really what's happening?
A little
here?
Different. With Adam and Chava started out without a Yetzer Hara. So they started out with no desire to.
Okay. Yeah, you can keep going.
Oh, both sides are shut.
Anyway,
so Adam and Chava started out with no Yetzer Hara, and then the Yetzer Hara came later. They had only Yetzer Tov. The child is the other way around. The child starts out with only Yetzer Hara and only Nefesh HaBahamas, and then after a certain point, the good, you know, the Yetzer Tov emerges. Okay.
You want a knife?
You want to stop?
Should we open that?
Should we stop now?
I think I have to stop now, yeah.
Okay. You want me to slice that open for you?
It's getting more interesting.
All right, so we're up to...
John.
We're up to Yud.
You want a knife?
Thank you. I'll do it at home.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Rabbi.
So...